Blog Talk Radio.
Fill My Eyes in Company with Poetry. Happy Friday. Hope you had a great week, and I hope you have a better week to follow. Weekend to follow. God, I can't talk tonight. Here we go. This is going to be good, Rex. I'm like already falling over my words. It's good to hear everyone. And it's great to see all the great poetry on the board. Looking forward to it. We got a full board, and it should be a good night. I don't know. Rex, what are you doing? Sounds like a tunnel. Yeah. So I hope you're doing good. Listen, we have a caller with us. We have Scott Sharp joining us tonight. So hello.
Oh, cool.
Welcome to the party.
Thanks.
How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Excellent.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Looking forward to some poetry tonight.
Yeah, we got all kinds of poetry tonight. Yes, we do. Anyway, what's new in the world of Rex?
Just a soul body.
Yeah, got to stop abusing it.
Things got to get done.
Yeah, that's the truth. Isn't that the truth? And Scott, what's new with you? Anything worth
I switched jobs to a different school district at the beginning of this year, so I've been very overwhelmed, quite honestly. It's made it hard to keep my normal writing routine and anything else, but
right,
it's a good move for me.
Good. Very good. That's
excellent.
Nice. It's a great one when you get those opportunities that work well for you. Hey, yeah, it always takes adjustment, but that's what we do. What is it? Never mind. I was going to say something, but I had to stop and think about how to say it. So forget it. Just forget it. Okay, well, so far it's the three of us, and I'm going to put up the first poem. And this is called My Brother, My Soulmate by Savannah 5. And I have an audio for this one. So let me put that up.
My soulmate, my brother. I always knew having a brother like mine was part of something wonderful, a special gift I was blessed with, who knew me inside and out. My buddy, my best friend, who grew up with me, sharing childhood memories and grown-up dreams with unconditional love. He understood me more than anyone I know. He was my lifeline, my pillar of support when my world fell apart. He enriched my life with humor and laughter. The sun always shone when he was around. A humble human being with gentle ways, always happy with the simple things of life. My heart shattered, so many tears I shed at his loss. Never to be forgotten, his treasured words to me. Life is always love. May your life be one of love and happiness. May you never forget what we have shared. He will always be by my side, giving me his strength, my truly amazing brother. And now, as I stare at his picture in the frame, I can smile, because he lived.
Great read, Silvana. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
That was an amazing tribute. I definitely enjoyed the poem. Very well written. Kind of had me going off thinking a little bit about my siblings. I have three brothers and a sister myself, and kind of brought home the whole idea of family to me. So very beautiful poem, and definitely enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Silvana.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And Gina, come
on
down.
What a beautiful tribute to a brother she loves so much. This seems so familiar to me. And I think that she had written another piece about her brother, or else Selena did, when Pam did the brother and sister contest. But it has a lot of the same notes in my mind. But it was just wonderfully penned. And I thought, you know, it was such a gentle and wonderful set of memories that she brought out and shared with everyone. So great job, Silvana, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. I appreciate it. Great piece.
All right. Thank you, Jean. And great reading, Silvana. Thank you very much. And yes, a powerful tribute. It's, hey, more often than not, we squabble with our siblings, but this kind of sets the tone that I guess you two were kind of the same side of the coin, so to speak. Not much of an edge that separated you. So it's a nice testament to how you drew from him, even at the darkest end of things when he finally passed on. you've got that note. Love is always love. Life is always love. May your life be one of love and happiness. May you never forget what we have shared. And then you sit there and it still gives you strength. And as you remember him in that picture, hey, you got thankful for the years you had together. So that's a blessing. Nicely done.
Amen. Okay.
All right, then.
Now, next poem, Rex, I'm going to give to you to read. This is Wishing on September Sky by Joseph Moon. So whenever you're ready.
Wishing on September Sky by Joseph Moon. As moon alights my sad state of mind, as if a bard writing of sunshine and wind, I try to poetize this longing, this yearning, the eternal flame in my heart forever burning. For that sweet sound from love's rosebud lips, upon which an ancient, a first butterfly greedily sips. Her voice which all God's heavenly angels admire, she my hopes, dreams, sleep, and endless desire. I wish only a glance from love's eyes, their hazel hue that outshines the starry skies, her tender touch which no sage could summarize, could end a child's cry, make ghosts arise. Blazing at clouds, thoughts grow countless tonight, so much to wish for in late lonesome light. And poem. And Jean, we're going to stop with you.
I knew you were coming to me because I was distracted doing something on the boards. You know, as always, I have to say that Joseph Moon is a wonderful poet. He always has beautiful work. It's very descriptive, and I love his imagery throughout. I'll start here. For what that sweet sound from love's rosebud lips, upon which an ancient, a thirst butterfly greedily sips. Her voice, which all God's heavenly angels admire, she my hopes, dreams, sleep, and endless desire. It's beautiful work, and it always has a classic kind of a feel to me when he writes. Something about it always seems to, I don't know, just it seems like just the classic poems and the classic poets in my mind. I'm not exactly sure why that is. It's kind of like Titus. The two of them, whenever I read their work, send me to a different level of poetry. So beautiful work, Joseph, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. And Scott, mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, I like this. This is, it's high to say anything, you know, relative to Shakespeare, but of course Shakespeare being one of the most famous sonnet writers and stuff, you know, this has some parts of it that made me kind of say, I like that, like the word of thirst and stuff. You know, within this sonnet, it has some of that language that tends to make me reflect back on some of Shakespearean works. Overall, I really did like the same stanza quite a bit that Gene just talked about and stuff. But the whole thing is very classy. It's written really nice. So great job, Joseph.
Nice. Thank you, Scott. And as he does that on Wishing on September Sky, he opens up that first stanza in that sad state of mind as he puts in that first line. That note, that yearning in the second stanza, and then only that wish in the third. So they've got somebody in mind because their hazel hue that outshines the starry skies, their tender touch which no sage could summarize, could end a child's cry, may ghosts arise. There's a nice note to along me in the moment as he sits in that lonesome light coming out from the moon. So a great circle background from the start with the moon, and then the lonesome light at the bottom end signifying you still sitting with that lonesome moon. So, nice, Scott. Nice, Joseph. Thank you very much. All right, Jane. We're back to you.
Well, the next piece I have is Please Take Time to by S. Sharp. So, S. Sharp, can I get you to read this for us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Just a quick background. This was done for a thing on concentration camps. Mm-hmm. And so with that, please take time to, inside these gates, puddles accumulate typhoid, muddy fingers bared to bone gather firewood, breaking buildings, breaking souls, eye sockets bulge and dry up, ribs and collarbones stand up, stand out, as if in a seagull salute, looking skyward for God or relief under an ashen moon. Last words burned in a crematorium, etched in the barrack walls, like bones pushing upon skin and memory. Last hopes forgotten, voice begotten. If there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. End poem.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. It's your turn to take time.
Scott, this is an excellent piece. There's not a whole lot of words to it. There's no long sentences to it, but it definitely hits every note. You know, it was just a horrible time in history. And I think that you really brought it to the forefront with the brevity that you wrote. And I think you did an excellent job with it. Let me see here. Looking skyward for God, or relief, under an ashen moon, last words burned in a crematorium, etched in the barrack walls, like bones pushing upon skin and memory, last hopes forgotten, voice begotten. If there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. You know, that's it. Very well said. You know, I think that this is just a great piece. And as always, you know, you have a way of writing as well. It's always very on point when I read your work. And I think that's wonderful. I'm still looking for you to post that one about your trip, by the way. Just I didn't
you know what? I never have gotten to that one, Gene.
Thanks
for the comment, though.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Wonderful piece. As good as it can get, right? For sure.
Yeah. I'll second that. It does hit on the dark, but it doesn't dip too far into it. And it's very descriptive. Those first three lines hit on that. Inside these gates, puddles accumulate typhoid, muddy fingers bared to bone. They all walk in to how easy it is for man to be that inhumane to other people. And you gather fire with breaking buildings, breaking souls, eye sockets bulge and dry up. This is very descriptive. And ribs and collarbones stand up and stand out as if in a seagull salute. That's almost a kind of a noted defiance in the moment with those, with that thought of the ribs and the collarbones, looking skyward for God or relief under an ashen moon, everything ominous, dark, you know what's going on, you know pretty much where you'll end up unless you've got some sort of skill that can be utilized until you expire in another atmosphere. But then you drop in the burning of the crematorium, etched in the barrack walls, like bones pushing on skin and memory, last hopes begotten, voice begotten. And the idea is we should never forget the how atrocious this kind of thing did go on. And in some instances, it still goes on around the world, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the last quote there, if there is a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness. Oh, that's a heavy note to those. You run your whole life with that strong. You run that whole, your whole life with that strong belief. Yet you seem forsaken in the moment. You kind of lose all sense of not just self, but why. And you never get an answer.
Yeah, this was a contest by Pam Rex. That was a quote that was etched into a barrack wall. If there's a God, he will have to beg my forgiveness.
Okay. Didn't know that.
So.
Put some emphasis on the piece. Nicely done.
Right. Thank you for that. Amazing show. Rex,
I'm coming back to you on this one. This is by Wild, and this is called "I Smoke My Cockroach Hissing Its Legs." So, it's definitely a record. It's not a Gene Reed.
I Smoke My Cockroach Hissing Its Legs by Wild. The Barbie caliper dorm slides hobbling into consciousness, smudged sides by pale blue clouds, paralyzed, swimming, ice idly by, raked by night's rays of Wi-Fi. I smoke my cockroach hissing its legs in my set teeth, glued in the upper reaches of them, racked and pulled by gluten shoulders from hairless men on. Both are shoes with compulsive frowns and cauliflower errors. With an ambidextrous cortex and soggy lips risen in toe, fingers trace beaches in a wash of waved sheets, whittling closeness from a vacuum gathering impulsively between the potential differential of overlapping synergy with exactly you. And boom. Something a little bit different. Scott, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
I'm poking this one in, Rex. I love the wording, that's for sure. The way it starts off, the Barbie caliper dawn slides hoveling into consciousness is smudged sigh. I mean, it's just the whole thing is it makes me smile because I'm sure it's about the picture. And so I'm sure written in some facetious sexual context here, but I love the wording. It's got a lot of really great word choices. The cauliflower errors, the compulsive frowns. I think I would have to reread this a couple times to kind of feel like I'm doing it justice in the quality of the write, because personally I think it probably is written really, really well, but the best I could do at this moment is to comment on just the quality of the word choices and the images that it created in my mind as you read it. So.
Nice. Thank you, Scott. All right, Gene, what do you think?
Well, I want to say hello to Laurent, who's called in. And, Laurent, did you get to hear this poem?
No, I did not. I'm sorry.
I did, and I have no clue where to even go. I'm not even going to lie. So, right?
I read it, but I didn't hear it. So I won't force you to try and invent a meaning that you don't quite see. But, you know, I will say this. I'm in total concert with you, not with the poem. In terms of my ability to look at it and say, it says this and such. And it may say this and such, but in a language I'm not familiar with. The Barbie caliper dawn slides hoveling into a consciousness smudged sigh by pale bruised clouds paralyzed, swimming ice idly by. The language itself is interesting. It's well formulated. It's unique. It does not read like a bad dream or a nightmare. It reads a dream or a drug dream of some kind. The language used seems to offer, I don't want to say intensity, although maybe that is the right word. It's fairly intense until you get to the ending, which kind of peters out, and maybe that's the point. I'm not exactly sure, and I'm done babbling, so I'll turn it back over to Rex, who, as usual, explains these things in great detail.
I'm being put on notice, huh? Well, I like the opening, the Barbie Caliper Dawn. It kind of gives a note to plastic in color, something not one would be very emotional to. It's tried, deceitful. Slides hobbling into consciousness, a smudged sigh. He's waking up in the moment. By pale bruised clouds, paralyzed, swimming ice idly by. The idea that there's it's a dark note to wake up to. Raked by night, raked by wild thighs. It kind of hits me with the idea of the dreams one has, and he's not very happy with it because he smokes his cockroach, hissing its legs to my set teeth with anger, glued in the upper reaches of a realm, kind of stitched into his mind or in his eyes right in the moment. He's not happy. Then there's that
actually isn't happy either.
The next couple of lines kind of hit on something else. Racks and pours by gluten shoulders from hairless men on boated of shoes with compulsive frowns and cauliflower errors with an ambidextrous cortex. I like that thought of an ambidextrous cortex, the left side, right side brain offsetting each other. But I'm getting the thought that who he's thinking about or did think about in that moment is spending time with someone else. The thought of being traded off, ambidextrous. One hand offers up to the other hand, so to speak. I don't get the soggy lip Rizla in tow, but I'll figure that out sometime. And fingers trace beaches and walk the wave sheet. So she's having fun. He's not, and he's angry. The thought of whittling closer from a vacuum, gathering a pulse between the potential differential of overlapping synergy with exactly. That's why he separated the you. He's imagining her having a all of what he wants with her, and he's got the you to spin it as a back-end singularity and still offering up that note to Barbie Caliper Dawn. So she might be that, not just the color of colored sky, the Barbie itself, but might be the Barbie in the offering that she's the one that gets around, gets the guys, and she's the one that's driving my ass nuts.
Wow. Somebody give that man an Oscar.
I don't know.
Well, Jane, what about you?
I would love it. Look, my comment to Wild was an interesting piece, and I would really appreciate some insight if you would give me some insight in it. That's exactly what my comment was. I'm not even going to pretend to know what the heck. Nope. My imagination is not that good. But I'm sure it all works somewhere. I'm sure of it. Like I say, it's usually me. So the next piece I'm going to put up is called Recurring Nightmare by Daniel Descino. And I'm going to give this one a read. So, Recurring Nightmare. I can't shut it off. The machine, perpetual motion, screams within my head, fueled by everything that was, that I have seen, that I've read. Demons that whisper of horrors to come. They wait patiently for the quiet times, as a lioness to a drinking gazelle. That's what I see. Their wicked, grotesque magic. Every raindrop is hurricane potential. Every ache is a debilitating cancer ready to devour my very essence. Every day is just a nightmare for survival, and every night is just a chance for more nightmares. Oh, please, merciful depression deity, have mercy on this day, and send me a catatonic mummification. The demons cannot find me if I am lost, a lost soul hiding in the dark. End of poem.
Great reading, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we kick it with you?
Well, the nightmare of depression and anxiety, ill feeling, is powerful in this poem. The demons that whisper of horrors to come, they wait patiently for the quiet times as a lioness to a drinking gazelle. The metaphor is an apt one. I guess that kind of mental illness or mental difficulties can come upon you quite suddenly. It's always there. You're always afraid it's going to leap on you in the shadows. you're never quite certain when, and then something triggers it. That something is kind of like the lioness finally springing when it sees it has a chance. Every raindrop is hurricane potential. The mental breakdown or the onset of the severe anxiety can come from anything, and anything can spawn it in the same way that a raindrop has hurricane potential. Perhaps only in the strict sense, but not realistically, but here, that it is realistic to assume that every raindrop has a hurricane potential, because it is that kind of mental disease, if you want to call it that, that adopts that kind of position. Oh, please, merciful depression, deity, have mercy on this day. Send me the catatonic mummification. He'd rather be catatonic, a prison in his mind, than have to go through what he's been going through. Powerful piece, no doubt. You really feel the emotion. And I hope it's not personal by any stretch.
All right. Thank you, Lenore. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I love Daniel's poetry. This one in particular, like I say, I think good poems make you feel things as you read it. And throughout this, I could just feel it. So, you know, I can't shut it off. The machine, perpetual motion, screams within my head, fueled by everything that was, that I've seen, that I've read, demons that whisper of horrors to come. So I could just feel it as it was being read, and the sense of depression and anxiety throughout the poem just definitely just jumps right off the page. Very well written. And the demons cannot find me if I'm a lost soul hiding in the dark. I just love that as an ending, kind of hoping to somehow hide from anxiety or hide from the depression that people feel and experience in life. And like I say, just overall, I just thought it was a very powerful write. So.
You know, I thought that this was an excellent piece. I did see that it was written for a contest on anxiety. But I'm with Scott. You know, I kind of felt that anxiety build nicely as his write continued on. And you could feel it in there. It's like that anticipation of the doom, the anticipation of the other shoe falling. You know, it's like you're always waiting for that. And in this poem, we get that feeling. So I think he really did a nice job with it. And I have to say good luck in the contest. Hopefully he'll kick it off nicely. But well done, and thanks for sharing with us, Dan. Great job.
Nice. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, I see that note by anxiety, but I'm wondering if it goes a little deeper than that, that first stanza has a lot of thought within it as far as demons that whisper of horrors to come. They wait patiently for the quiet times. As a lioness to a drinking gazelle, that's what I see, their wicked, grotesque mutation magic. It's kind of a note there to end times, the quiet times, when everything comes to bear, so to speak, the apocalypse. And even that thought with the raindrop, you can roll into the, it turns into a hurricane potential, the idea of flooding. But the back end of this, he also hits on again, oh, please, merciful depression deity. Again, that note to the gods, have mercy on this day and send me to a catatonic mummification. The demons cannot find me if I am a lost soul hiding in the dark. So it's got a nice underlying note to religion within the anxiety. I'm wondering if that might not be the draw. Those who are so deep into the angle of the end time that they bear this kind of anxiety, and it draws heavy. So nicely done, Daniel. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Well, the next one that I have to put up, Lauren, I'm going to ask you to read this one, And it's called Honey in Teardrops by Jack Tomkiewicz.
All right. Honey and teardrops. Like honey and teardrops, death can bring a path standing beneath giant oaks. And in time, joy and dancing. Like sugar and raindrops, breathing can bring walls on riverbanks, frogs jumping. And in time, smiles like giving chocolates. Like healing and dewdrops, bringing singing, brisk leafy breezes in fall, scent of crackling cedar fire pits, and in time, hand ice. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Gene, you get to lead us. What do you think?
Oh, God, he wants me to lead us. I thought this was a nice write by Jack. Like honey in teardrops, death can bring a path to standing neath giant oaks. And in time, joy and dancing. That's an interesting thought there. Honey and teardrops. I don't think I would have ever thought of that. And it's, I like it, you know. It has an interesting, thought comes to mind on that. And then this is like sugar and raindrops. Breathing can bring walks on riverbanks, frogs jumping, and in time smiles like giving chocolate. He's just turned it around and, turned the sorrow into something a little different and made it a little more palatable as this right went on. So I think he did a nice job with it, and it was, an intriguing thought on life, love, nature, sadness, sorrow, and hope. I think the hope stands out, so... Well done, Jack, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Gene. And Scott, how about you?
I really like this. This is really cool. I love how he starts each stanza with the simile of comparison, really, of good to bad, and then how he kind of runs through each stanza to how, bad things can always lead to something good and lasting and powerful in our lives. So, just like in that first stanza, like honey and teardrops, death can bring a path to standing neat giant oaks, and in time, joy and dancing. And so, like the giant oak in your yard, and, that you probably have parties and enjoy many good times underneath it. Although, bad things happen, they do pass, and good things tend to come our way. So, I just thought this is a really, really cool write. And, I always do like Jack's stuff, and this one definitely didn't change my thoughts on that. So.
Nice. Thank you, Scott. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, Jack says that it's a bit about sadness. We all have it, how we can deal with it. I think the poem itself takes its cue from its title, Honey and Teardrops. Even though tears are filled with sadness, there is that within the moisture that is sweet, and it can take sadness and turn it to something a little bit more positive, if you will. And he says that through the giant oaks beneath which there is joy and dancing. The same thing with the raindrops that fall from the sky. Even that can be sweet because it can lead to walks on riverbanks. And the healing that comes in dewdrops, which normally occur in the morning, let's say, new day, bringing singing, leafy breezes in fall, at night, or one assumes the scent of crackling cedar fire pits, and in time a hand on a cheek would suggest a certain amount of reflection, a certain amount of thinking about and perhaps a reverie here concerning the past of this individual who is now gone. Either way, it's a beautiful piece on dealing with sadness. Nice job, Jack.
Great comment. You're right on the back end of that, Laurent. And yeah, this kind of hits on the back end of grief, where everything finally hits that note of understanding and letting it come to pass. And as you do that, you do grow in the moment, and that's where you get to those like healing and dewdrops, bringing stinging, bristly, deep breathes and fall. You end up with a new note to life as where you thought you didn't have anything before. So there is hope on the back end of things once you've gotten to that point of acceptance and it is now transcended to a new life, so to speak. So nicely done, Jack. All right, Jane, we're back into you. But you got to unmute.
Hey. Don't be mean to me.
Yep.
I was answering the phone. And just so everybody knows, we have Bill Shipley joining us tonight. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Bill.
Did you happen to hear Jack Tonkovic's poem?
I sure did. I thought it was beautiful. And it made me think about how, you know, when you come close to death or even when someone you love dies and you go through that grieving process and you begin to realize how precious life is, you do start noticing those oak trees a little bit more and smile. For me, that's what I got out of this poem, that when you survive it, you start to see life in a whole new way. And you might taste honey in raindrops. I thought that was a beautiful idea. Death is not the end. It's a new beginning.
That's what they say. Nice. Okay. Well, let's see. I have the next poem ready to go. And this is called A Better Friend Than Me by Stellina. And I have an audio for this. So here we go.
Though I may seem to you a peculiar sight, my aim is to serve and help you in your plight. I may be a vivid shade of neon blue, and I'm no old painting, that much is true, but I have unrivaled power, and no one can doubt. When you rub this ancient lamp and let me out, fear had a met come. For years I've been trapped inside this shell. To tell you the truth, I ain't doing so well. I'm a pretty big guy with no room to spread. Most mornings I wake with a pounding head. I may not be a heartthrob, but come on, set me free. For you will never, ever have a better friend than me. Min fadle kaharahani. Day I was imprisoned by the vizier's curse. I thought my life couldn't get much worse, but 10,000 years was a fate too cruel. I vowed never again to be anyone's fool. Now here I float up high, impressive in front of you, though you don't look like much from my point of view. El Heren Meser Turit. Hey, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. Let's discuss terms reasonably, we'll get on fine. You can tell me your deep secret desire, all the lofty heights to which you aspire. So consider most carefully your granted wishes three, for you will never ever have a better friend than me.
Great read, Serena. Thank you for the sound pack. It is very much appreciated. And Bill, why don't we start with you, please?
Yes, I love the stuff about genies and the djinn, and I see the picture of Aladdin up at the top of this poem. And I think it was pretty good how she incorporated these Arabic phrases, min fadlakarani, which means please. And it says, please, please set me free. But the inclusion of the Arabic gives it that, that feel of genies, which come from their belief in jinn, which are evil spirits, and they'll never be your friend. They fool you. And the way she reads it in the SoundCloud gives it that ominous tone, which certainly complements the verse. Stelina, once again, just always delivers. I heard her sing a song for the first time the other night, and I'm just never ceased to be impressed by her work. And I love this genie stuff.
Thank you, Bill. Laurent, how about you?
Well, let me say, I think it was Robin Williams who first sang these words, or words close to it, in the movie. And I think this is a wonderful pastiche of that. She's taken the original, kind of made it her own, changing words, changing verses, not necessarily changing meanings, but there's a wonderful sense of humor in this piece that she takes and makes it very, very light, just like the original one was, but with a hint of darkness, if you will. Either way, very skillfully done. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you, Laurent. Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I like this a lot. Stelina, as always, comes through, like Bill said. I love the rhyming of it. It's well put together, and then just the fact of her reading it, personally, I thought the way she read it also brought it to life, where, it kind of had me smiling throughout it, the whole way she both created it and read it just kind of brought the whole thing home for me. And like I say, very impressive as always with Stelina.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. And Jin Genie, how about you?
I loved this piece. I really did. I thought it was fun and well-rhymed, wonderful flow, and a great story told here. And it was excellent, just really excellent. A fabulous job with this, Stelina, and you read was spot on. It was fun, and I liked it very much. Yep.
Absolutely. The funny thing is, Laurent mentioned Robin Williams doing it. I could hear Robin Williams doing this, and even tossing in those impersonations, a little Schwarzenegger, some other characters to beef up the lines and have a little bit of fun. Because this was fun. So nicely done, Stelina. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome. Awesome sauce. Okay. That's it, Stelina. Genie. Gosh. It's too funny. This next piece I'm going to put up is by Darkened Auras, and I'm going to give this one a read. It's called Walking Through the Pits of Hell by Darkened Auras. Walking through the pits of hell, an evil girl or empty shell. Not lifted up, but down she fell, as if cast into a wishing well. The fires burn her skin so bright, much to her twisted delight. Darkness calls her from the light, the devil holds her, oh, so tight. Demons are at her beck and call, help her destroy that ethereal wall. Watch it crumble, decay, and fall. Back into the world she starts to crawl. Back up on her feet, a beauty beheld, her lust for a victim soon to be quelled, with might given to her unparalleled, impaling a new heart, her deal now upheld. She's free now to be herself once again, now that she's caused an ultimate sin, but now she wrestles with demons within, doesn't feel right in her own skin. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, that's an interesting write. Dark Andorra has always puts out some really good stuff, but yeah, I love the rhyming throughout this and stuff, but I also like the story of it. Definitely kind of goes with the picture that she obviously wrote to here. Love the way it comes to its ending, especially. She's free now to be herself once again, now that she's caused an ultimate sin, but now she wrestles with demons within and doesn't feel right in her own skin. So kind of wrestling with the things that she feels and does in her existence. So very powerful write, as always, from Dark Andorra's.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Bill, how about you?
Yeah, I like the darkness in this, but and I think Scott alluded to something in the rhythm rhyme of it. And it's I won't go down the rabbit hole, but I've always loved the research of Noam Chomsky, who talks about the relationship between math and language. So if you'll notice the rhythm in this poem, I was looking at the stanzas trying to figure out how it maintains such a smooth rhythm. And the first few stanzas all begin with seven syllables and end with eight syllables, and that's fairly consistent until the last two, which play off nine and ten syllables. But sometimes the struggle to find this rhyming pattern, the math alone is can help with the rhythm and meter. So I was seeing some consistency with that in the number of syllables in the way the early stanzas begin and end. And I thought that was cool. I don't know if it was intentional or if it just happened because she has this, and because Dark and Aurora's, who I don't know if that's a man or a woman, I'm sorry. But I just think this writer, I wonder if it was intentional or just if they have a fantastic sense of rhythm. That's my rhythm.
Nice. Thank you, Bill. Laurent, how about you?
I'll take a cue from the first stanza, walking through the pits of hell, an evil girl, or empty shell. The question is asked, is she there because she's truly evil, or she's simply a shell that's going to be used by someone or something? Initially, she's delighted. The fire has burned her skin so bright, much to her twisted delight. Darkness calls her from the light. The devil holds her oh so tight. He's really strengthening his grip on her. Now, she has power because demons are at her beck and call. Help her destroy that ethereal wall. Watch it crumble, decay, and fall back into the world. She starts to crawl. She begins to come back into the real world. Back on her feet, a beauty beheld. Her lust for a victim is soon to be quelled. Here she begins to have second thoughts, I think, because what she's doing is, well, what she has done has somehow freed her, because she has allowed herself perhaps to be used by the devil, but she doesn't feel comfortable about it anymore. She wrestles with demons within and doesn't feel right in her own skin. So the initial urge for a victim and what might be done to that victim has now changed, I think, and she's beginning to rethink her position. Very interesting piece.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Dean. You got 3 minutes. What about you?
Oh, Lord, I got totally lost. I'm sorry. Hang on a sec. I did write a comment. I thought it was a great story told by Dark and Auras. Nice rhyme and flow throughout the piece. And I think I liked her last two stanzas the best. Back up on her feet, a beauty beheld. Her lust for a victim soon to be quelled. What's might given to her unparalleled. Impaling a new heart, her deal now upheld. And it goes on how she's free. And I think that they were great stanzas because it showed her escape, although it definitely had a high cost. And I kind of like the way she did that. So, well done, and thank you so much, Chris, Nice piece.
Nice, Jane. Part of what makes this work well is the mono rhyme for each stanza. It sets the tone and pace. And Laurent hit on that right up front, an evil girl or empty shell. Question right there, but that second stanza actually delivers you into the note of who and what she is, much to her twisted delight. Darkness calls her from the light. Devil holds her oh so tight. So she's willing in that moment. Then, so, as Laurent said, demons are a beck and call. Help her destroy that ethereal wall. Watch her come with a can fall. Back into the world she starts to crawl. So now she's kind of bearing now. That sort of impaling a new heart, her deal now upheld. She needed to offer up that heart to the devil for all of what she wished for, going back out into the world. And now she's free to be who she thinks she is, understanding in that last sin. But she's wrestling with the demons within. She didn't think she'd have that much of a big deal. But yes, they invade. They occupy the same space. And she doesn't feel right in her own skin. It's on that note, be careful what you wish for, because you might actually get it, and you won't like the end result. So, nicely done, Christina. Thank you very much. All right, Jane. We're back on you.
Okay, Rex. Okay, everybody, we're into a Frisky Friday little tidbits here, so just bear with me. Rex, this next one is for you to read. This is Your Body, My Body by Nuno Cardoza and Hope Soul. These are carryovers from Wednesday's show.
Okie dokie. Your Body, My Body, Ours by Nuno Cardoza. Be careful with me in your tidal waves. Heated throes of passion can lead me slipping into something more comfortable as I dress myself in you. Hands drop their thorns as our silks combine. There's a lack of words. One finger covers lips, soon to be shushed into howling. Eyes wide open, ready for this escape, hiding in your moonlight, paling desires of wants in need of rescuing, making wishes on each of your ribs. Be my salvation in our eternal sin. I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you. I'll drink, sleep, and eat to that. Getting your fill, wade in the water, waters of ours, sip, eat, be, me. And Paul. All right, Jean, I'm going to stop with you.
Well, you know, I thought it was a nice piece, and I think that their voices blended beautifully. You know, there was no cutoff where, you know, you could tell Hope said something and Nuno said something. It just flowed beautifully all the way through. But I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you. I'll drink, sleep, and eat to that. Getting your fill, wade in the waters of ours, sip, eat, and be me. I don't know, I just kind of like the way that kind of pulled together at the end there. So it was a great piece, and, you know, thank you guys for sharing with us. Absolutely. Glad we could get it on air tonight.
Thank you, Jean. Bill, how about you?
Yeah, a couple things jumped out. Whatever caution begins in the very beginning is soon thrown out. And I say caution in the beginning because it says, be careful with me in your tidal waves. As if to say that the force of this is so great, I might suffer from it. And saying, be careful with me. And then in the throes of passion, the earth and the sea, slipping into something more comfortable, which is this other person. So I there's a lot of sensuality in this, and the power of intimacy, sexuality, and I can. What I'm really seeing in the third stanza, where it says there's a lack of words, one finger covers lips, and it makes me think of if you've ever dated someone in their parents' house. Maybe you're somewhere And it's like you put your finger over their lips, like, oh no, they got to be quiet. If your dad comes in the room, what's going to happen? I don't know if anyone else has had the experience, but I've been there in the teaching. So I think, you know, I can see a lot of pictures here. And in the last stanza, even where it talks about hiding in the moonlight. Good, good stuff.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, bye.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I like the structural choices that are being made in this. The way that, like in that first stanza, stair-stepping, the slipping into something, just the way it reads due to the way they're structurally putting it there. Be careful with me in your tidal waves, heated throes of passion can lead me slipping into something. So, you know, I mean, just the way that they're putting it on the page, I think actually highlights the words that they're choosing. I like that. There are several other things about it. I also like that the word choice in hands drop their thorns. Definitely like that as a word choice. And also, I think it was Bill that was mentioning the hiding in your moonlight. I also thought that that was really powerful. Very passionate, right? And not a big surprise from Nuno and his wife, Hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Laurent, how about you?
This suggests an absorption of one person by another, a sublimating of personality, perhaps. Be careful with me in your tidal waves. Heated throes of passion can lead me slipping into something more comfortable as I dress myself in you. Putting her skin on, so to speak, becoming one with her in a time where there are no words necessary. Hands drop their thorns as our skills combine. There's a lack of words. One finger covers lips, soon to be shushed into howling. Don't talk, but respond. And if it's howling in the throes of passion, then that's fine. Eyes wide open suggests that this escape into passion, hiding in your moonlight, as the poet says, hailing desires of wants and need of rescuing. And that's important. The act is in the process of rescuing a soul from dark thoughts, perhaps, from sadness, from anxiety, from the daily struggle. And he calls this salvation an eternal sin. It's a dichotomy, if you will. The very thing that rescues is also the thing that can, depending on your viewpoints, condemn. And he finishes by saying, I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you, which I will do. Sip, eat, and be me. There's an exchange there of not of fluids necessarily, but of there's a transference of essence between the two. I think the two become each other, as the title states, your body, my body, ours.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Yeah, that opening stanza when he gets into slipping into something more comfortable as I dress myself in you was a deeply intimate note right there. And I did like that one finger covers lips, soon to be shushed into howling. Another nice note. But that third stanza, eyes wide open, I took that as a deliberate note. Because if you think, remember the movie Eyes Wide Shut, is that motif of the guy going out and looking for something beyond what he has at home. This is hitting on that very same motif, especially with the Be My Salvation Now in Eternal Sin. But the idea here is he doesn't have to go out to find what he already has at home. So instead of being shut, his eyes are wide open in the moment, hiding in her moonlight, paling desires of wants and need of rescuing. Great thoughts there. And the back end, I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you. I'll drink, sleep, and eat to that. and then getting your fill, waiting the water's allow, sit, eat, be me. There, as you, it doesn't have to be the easy note of sharing bodily fluids, as Laurent said. It can be just as dipping into each other fully, so that it's not just him, her, or me, so to speak. It is them in the moment of singularity. So, nicely done, you two. Thank you very much. All right,
Jane. I say it's the blending of souls. But anyway, I have a phone call from Naomi. So hello, Naomi, and welcome to the party. Did you happen to hear that by Nuno?
Yeah, I did. Be careful with me in your tidal waves, heated throes of passion. And I like the you know, what follows can lead me slipping into something more comfortable as I dry dress myself in you. Yeah, that's great, you know, when you really have that intimacy there, and when it's, you know, from both sides, when it's one side, you can lose yourself in somebody else, which is not the greatest thing in a relationship. But here I understand, you know, that it's in the throes of passion, so it's in the lovemaking, you know. So that's really wonderful. It shows an intimacy, you know, between the two of them that's really, really there. And I have to wonder who painted the picture. What was it? Which of the both of them did that art? Because it's always art from them. But wonderful art piece too, and a wonderful light.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you, Naomi.
Now, for the next piece I'm going to put up, it's called Fire of Desire by Logan Solo and Poetry in the Blood. And Scott, could I get you to read this for us tonight?
Absolutely.
Here we go.
Fire of Desire by Logan Solo. Night stands like a lamppost illuminated for you and I. Love's silhouette awakened. Dreamscape folds like silken sheets into pockets of rapture. Passion ignited. Lips meet in velvet choreographed, slow and inviting, senses disrobed. Bodies collide in sensual ecstasy. Your touch ignites a furnace of feeling. Enter and exit, amorous carnality. How nature's children do shiver with desire. Swimming in sweat, we writhe in our lust. How two become one, and then finally combust in foam.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. And this is also a collaboration with Poetry in the Blood. The first half is hers, the second is his. Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, the fire of desire. All desire has their own fire, some strong, some simply coals bent, waiting to explode. Bodies collide in sensual ecstasy. Your touch ignites a furnace of feeling, uses heat to transfer emotions. Enter and exit, amorous carnality. How can nature's children do shiver with desire? The enter and exit, I think, as a reference to the physical act of the lovemaking. Swimming in sweat, we writhe in our lust, and in doing so, how two become one and then finally combust. It really takes the entire act of lovemaking and builds it like fire, which begins to flame and then spontaneously combusts. Perhaps not so spontaneously. It does take a little work to build the fire that reaches its zenith, but nonetheless, there it is.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Naomi, how about you?
Yes. I really liked Laurent's comment But, I really liked the first stanza, how it just, it's lightly, settles into the poem. You know, night stands like a lamp post illuminated for you and I, love silhouette awakened. And then dreamscape folds like silken sheets into pockets of rapture, passion ignited. And then the meeting of the lips, which, is the first act of lovemaking and intimacy. It's when your lips meet, and then you have the bodies that collide, and then the rest comes. So excellent, right, all through Logan Solo and Poetry in the Blood. So very well.
Thank you, Naomi. Bill, how about you?
I have to say thank you, Greg. I think earlier you alluded to something which makes a lot more sense to me, because you said this is a collaboration between two poets. And knowing that, it's interesting how the first two stanzas have this almost reserved quality to it, and that everything becomes more stable in the next portion of the poem, which I think probably is the introduction of the other writer. But it's an incredible collaboration, because it's hard to take two separate minds and get them on the same page and communicating the same. There's a few of these people there. And the first thing, there's a greater reliance on metaphor that the night stands like a lamp post, and the dream skateboard like silky feet. And that style does abandon the next portion of the poem, but it all blends together in this feverish kind of sexual encounter. And I kind of feel like when you get in the car and sit down, but then you don't know where to go. That's kind of how I feel with this erection. You got to forgive my humor.
I thank you, Bill. And Scott, you got to read it. How about you?
I like with a free verse poem having a sense of rhythm and stuff, and so I really feel like this one has it built into it. Reading it, I could feel it and was able to read the rhythm into it. I kind of like that about it. Also kind of like, a few of the terms used within it, senses disrobed, kind of like that as a wording choice there. And just overall, it's a very passionate collaboration between Logan and Poetry in the Blood. So very, very well done.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And Gene, how about you?
Yeah. I thought this was a nicely penned piece by Josie and Logan. A great blending of voices, and I thought that the piece built nicely into that final combustion. It started out slow, and it built, and it built, and it built. And then next thing you know, there's that combustion. And I thought it was fun. And I thank them for sharing in the contest very much. Great piece. And it was great to see something from Poetry in the Blood. I know she hasn't been around in a while, so that was a treat for me. And thank you again.
Nice. Yes, she did set the stage well with those first three stanzas. You've got that note right up front. Night stands like a lamppost illuminated for you and I, love silhouette awakened. There's a kind of noir touch to that, the lamppost. And then the dreamscape folds like silken sheets in the pockets of rapture. Again, you still get that touch of something black and white in the moment happening. And then you get that touch, little touch of color with that third stanza. Lips meet in velvet choreographed, slow and inviting. And I like that last line. Senses disrobed, loss of inhibitions in the moment, and then Logan brings in the back end of it with the three stanzas, where everything evolve right down to that final note of combustion that you said. So, well done, you two. Came out nicely done. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, James.
So, let me see. I think we only have one. No, I have two. Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this next one. And this is called The Alchemy of Sensuality by K. Oz. And I have to find the partner's name. K. Oz and...
Put it up?
And Lamra. Yes, I put it up. Corrupt Chaos. So...
All right, that's it. The Alchemy of Sensuality. Chaos. I bet your skin tastes like vanilla in my coffee. Murder in your mind, your words killing you softly. You take your time, a piece of my soul. This is robbery, but probably one of my only crimes, wanting your body. And fuck.
Mm-mm. It's much longer than that.
Oh, I beg your pardon. But my only crime is wanting your body. These charges against me will be stopping me. Feeling your steaming soul seems to be my hobby. You can take me to court for all your embodying. I'll take you to heaven for all your offering. You slide so smooth, like lemon tea. The taste on tongue, a tropical treat. I drink delicious descriptions designed for me, thinking things wicked, you dipping, diving deep. If I'm a criminal, lock me inside secrets, secrete, guilty as charged, I'm complete, the sentencing you deem to be my defeat. So sweet should your punishment be, pleasure and pain, poke and prod you, strip you of your leather and chains. I'll just lock you in my heart, tuck the key in a rose, plant it in this essential soil to see if it grows. Now, and both.
Great reader. Thank you very much. All right, Naomi, we're going to start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, this was just delightful. Oh, my gracious. You know, it was fun. I thought it was really fun. You know, the metaphor of a robbery and him stealing her and her stealing him. And, you know, I just love that you slide so smooth like lemon tea, the taste on tongue, a tropical treat. I drink delicious description designed for me. I thought that was so neat, that reference to lemon tea there, you know, a tropical treat. I bet your skin tastes like vanilla in my coffee, murder on my mind, your words killing me softly. Like a couple of references to song there, killing me softly with your words. And I love the end also, strip you of your leather and chains, I'll lock you in my heart, tuck the key in a rose, plant it in the sensual soil to see if it grows. So wonderful, wonderful, and a very witty write, I think, you know, it's clever, and well done.
Nice, thank you, Naomi. Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Naomi. It's very well written and everything. I had something in mind. Give me a second. oh, my goodness. I am blanking at the moment. Hang on just a second. Can you come back to me, Rex?
Sure.
I have
Bill.
Now I'm blanking on it.
That's all right. We'll come back. Bill, how about you?
Well, I really like how, the expression of this longing, he begins by defining it in ways that a reader can relate to through the sense of taste. And we see that in the beginning with I Bet Your Skin Tastes Like Vanilla in My Coffee. And then later on in the third stanza where he talks about the smoothness of lemon tea, we may not always be able to identify with someone's description of a touch or a feeling, but we know flavors and we can relate to that. And I think it's really cool how he used flavoring to describe his want for this person, who I'm not sure is someone he really knows that well. It almost feels like he's someone that admiring from afar, and that in all of his want, he feels that there may be something wrong with it. Because the crime, my crime is wanting your body, and you can take me to court for that wanting. So somewhere there's a sense that there might not be something very right about my wanting you as much as I do. That kind of sense is what I get through this. Very cool.
Thank you, Bill. Gene, how about you?
Oh, geez. I'm so on top of my game here. I thought this was a... Wow, where did it go? God, I had two things open with the same poem. I thought it was nicely written, and I thought there was great imagery throughout. And, I have to kind of agree with Bill. I loved the first stanza. I bet your skin tastes like vanilla in my coffee. Murder on my mind. Your words killing me softly. You take your time. And then when you get down to that, I think it is the third stanza. 1, 2, 3, yeah. You slide so smooth like a lemon tea. The taste on tongue, a tropical treat. A drink, delicious. Descriptions designed for me. I think that is, they were wonderful stanzas. And I think that they really, they fit together well in the thought process. Two completely different flavors, but, that thought process I thought was really nicely done. So great job, guys, and thanks for sharing. For real, for real.
Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, the comment was made, I forget by who, actually I forget what that comment was, but this is from the point of view of a thief, all right, who's having a piece with himself stolen, but is committing the crime of wanting his lover's body, and his charges against me won't be stopping me. Stealing his steaming soul seems to be my hobby. Regardless of what else I do, I want that part of you the same way that you're going to take part of me. And you can take me to court for all you're embodying. Doesn't matter. I'll take you to heaven for all that you're offering. He really spins it on its head, so to speak. If he is a criminal, yes, then come lock me up. I'm guilty as charged. But beware, the sentencing you deem to be in my defeat, the very thing which you're going to punish me with is what I consider so sweet. Should your punishment be pleasure and pain, poke and prod you, strip you of your leather and chains, he's going to lock her in his heart and tuck the key in a rose, plant it in the sensual soil to see if it grows, to make the relationship perhaps something even stronger, perhaps something even better. But there's this delightful back and forth between a supposed punishment for someone who's guilty of something quite sensual. I love the interplay of robbery, of theft, punishment, of reward. It's nicely done.
Nice.
Thank you, Laurent. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, and that's what I kind of was thinking of earlier, was the extended metaphor that runs throughout this of crime and, robbery and theft and all these things. And I kind of like the way that runs throughout this whole poem. Very well done with that. And that also just the weaving of the rhyme throughout each stanza and everything kind of adds to it as well. It's a passionate write, but with the twist of trying to
weave in that concept of murder, robbery, crime, all that thing into it. So anyways, that's what had caught me, but then I distracted myself and forgot what I was thinking. So anyways, very good write.
Thank you, Scott. Great comments, everybody. This was a fun piece. There's touches, as Naomi put it, dry humor in here, which is playful, especially rolled around the thought with a murder on your mind, killing you softly with your words, and offering up the criminal, the punishment, the idea of, you can take me to court for all you're embodying, I'll take you to heaven for all you're offering. It's playful, it's fun, and it's descriptive. It does offer up those notes to a sensuality that a lot of people don't really hit on, the sort of taste, because it's part and parcel of what walks within that realm. So, nicely done, Chaos and Llama. Thank you very much, Olamra. All right, Jean.
Okay,
back to you.
Yes. I have the next one ready to roll, but I think we're going to have to cut this back to about 3 comments per poem, Rex, so we can get the rest of them in. Okay?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. This next one's by Arcana Amor. It's called Sanguinum Memoriam, and he did this with Femora D. Salweaver. And I have an audio for this, so let me put it on.
Together we wade through the mists of time, our solace shared neath a cloak of shadows. In twilight's trysts, our devotion is anointed. Beneath crimson shades of shattered silence,
we hearken unto the call of the night as we suffer our love's most potent, clinging to the memories long ago lost, and beneath the blackened moon we cried.
Our undying love is cloaked in darkness, denied and damned to flee dawn's embrace, victims of a hunger that haunts the pitch, condemned to an eternity of undead desire.
How I miss the warmth of our living flesh and long for something more than emptiness. Alas, life itself was stolen from us when passion was cursed and turned to dust.
Home has become the bleakness of graveyards, where we consummate craving with a close caress. Our fangs bite deeply into each other's languor, sharing the passion of this eternal connection.
This is the only intimacy we have left as we exchange bitter stabs upon our veins. Now not even death dare kiss our lips, forever a curse to endure this torment.
Upon the beating wings of black lament, soaring in synergy midst spectral coalescence, melting into the echoing chimes of midnight, as our dark souls rejoice the thrill of the dance.
We reminisce the days of old as we walk, our will to love yet to give way and desist. Despite our affliction, we still persist, for a love such as this does not simply die.
This union is bathed in the blood of martyrs who surrendered their faith in throes of demise, remembered in cascades of scarlet red roses that adorn our facades in memorial memoirs.
Great read, Arcana and Tamora. Thank you for the sound pack. We are very pleased. Thank you. And Naomi, we're going to start with you.
Uh-oh.
Naomi, you go.
You unmute, Naomi. Okay, she must have stepped away. Right.
All right, Laurent, let's go to you.
Certainly. Our undying love is cloaked in darkness, denied and damned to three dawns of race, victims of a hunger that haunts the pitch, condemned to an eternity of undead desire. It's been a while since I've written, since I read a vampire poem, and this one is done in great elegance, never mentioning the words, only the act, but it's a melancholy plaint for what has followed the initial sensation of power over victims that being a vampire can bring to you. And now they see it as being condemned to an eternity of undead desire. And that desire is for their own living flesh, not for the living flesh of others, which you might assume. Alas, life itself was stolen from us, and passion was cursed and turned to dust. True passion did leave them at that point. What they have left now is not passion, and home has become the bleakness of graveyards where we consummate craving with a close caress. Our fangs bite deeply into each other's languor during the passion of this eternal connection. What they have left is each other. That's where the passion was centered, because pretty much all else has been stolen from them. And this is quite an excellent poem, very skillful. The back and forth between the two is natural and emotive, and made it a great listen.
All right. Thank you, Laurent. Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Laurent. It's really well written, and really just enjoy the language usage throughout it and everything as well. Many places, several of the verses that Laurent just read, do you like the way that it kind of talks about the passion and the love that, you know, that exists between them. And we, you know, just the verses, we reminisce the days of old as we waltz, a will to love yet to give way and desist. Despite our affliction, we still persist, for a love such as this does not simply die. Just very, just word for word, such great word choices all the way through that. This union is bathed in the blood of martyrs who surrendered their faith in throes of demise, remembered in cascades of scarlet red roses that adorn our facades and memorial memoirs. Just very elegantly written all the way through. A great collaboration.
Excellent. Thank you. Bill, how about you?
I probably have a different little feeling on this write, because I don't see it as positive. I see it as sad and just tragic, like something that's dead but just refusing to die and lay down. And it's almost as if these two forces that know it's over, but yet their connection, I think Laurent kind of hinted on this, maybe everything else is dead, but the only thing that's left is their connection, and they are enduring it, but it's not real. As it says in the last line, our facade, and memorial memoirs and Our Will to Love, Give Way and Desist. So it's saying to me, it's using these dark terms of death to describe something that is no longer living, but maybe just going through the motions, which it's cool how he's using this use of these Ted zombie-like characters continuing through something that is dead. It's sad to many, very sad.
Thank you, Bill. All right, Jean, we're coming back up to you.
Okay, since Naomi has returned.
I see.
I'm going to put hers up. And this is called Last Words by Naomi Sarah. So whenever you're ready, Naomi. I did say, well, Naomi, are you on mute?
Oh, yeah, I'm on mute. I'm on mute, sorry. Okay, I changed the title to The End. So this is the end. We sit knee-deep in silence. The faucets drip, 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 reverberating around the room. Yet neither of us move to stop it. Outside, there is no traffic, no bird song, and we sit there, fall leaves under frost, the air so brittle it could snap. If it doesn't, I could. It's midsummer, but I feel the chill, the coldness. This is my winter. The anger, pain, sadness, all intermingled into those moments when our words stop. Into the moment my heart broke. Yet it was a good breaking, leading to healing, to new ways onward. Sometimes loss says more. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, we had a really sad, a melancholy note all the way through, and I think you did it in a beautiful way. Just an excellent, excellent piece. It's not real long, but it doesn't need to be, because I think that, I can still call this a brevity, I think, because it's not, you know, extremely long. But any good brevity, you don't need a lot of words in order to get your point across, and I think you did it beautifully in this. It's a nice job.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Laurent, how about you?
Really appreciated this piece quite a bit, Naomi. You started off having the two of them, or the two of you, listening to the faucets drip, drip, drip. And then you say, yet neither of us moves to stop it. And, you know, you might wonder, well, why? It's because it's no longer a moment that's shared with that faucet. That faucet is now outside of what used to be kind of a communal property, so to speak, where one or the other might hurry over to turn it off because it's disturbing the both of them. But now that separation between the two of them exists, and the drip is outside of that, no longer important enough to address. This emphasizes that winter can come to the soul at any time. It may be midsummer, but I feel the chill, the coldness. This is my winter. And I like the way that is articulated. The moments when our words stopped, the moment my heart broke. And just at the moment of extreme pain, extreme sadness, you turn it around, yet it was a good breaking, leading to healing, to new ways onward. Sometimes loss says more, in the same way that sometimes less is more. Sometimes loss says more. Really creative right there, Naomi. I enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. Thank you, Rob. All right, Naomi. I saw this right from the we see knee-deep in silence, the faucets drip, 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 reverberating around the room. Along with there is outside no traffic, no bird song, we sit there, right down to the thought of the air is so brittle it could snap. if it doesn't, I could. That first half had me thinking of Bukowski and the descriptive thought of what's happening in the moment. And then the back end all hit on the idea of the feeling, the emotion being tied into the reality of what's coming in. Midsummer, I feel the chill, the coldness. This is my winter. The anger, pain, and sadness all intermingled. And then the back end, the very last couple lines, yet it was a good breaking. Something needed to happen. So the breaking occurred, leading to healing, to new ways onward. Sometimes lost, there's more, which hits on that idea of, hey, you can't really live until you've hit the pain, and then once you've hit the pain, then you get to heal, and new skies open up, so to speak. So, nicely done, Naomi.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're coming to you.
Okay, Laurent, I have your piece up next is called A Light Touch of Death by Laurent Iwan. Here we go. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Yes, ma'am. A Light Touch of Death. Late light shone from a large wooden shed at the rear of a stone-walled property at the edge of a grassy country road. Robert of Bayeux tended to his children, cradling a young one newly born that very day. Delicate fleece combed by powerful hands, battle-hardened and scarred at the fringes. His innate gentleness had survived horrors. The lamb in his lap lay deeply dozing under an old warrior's rhythmic caress. Peace was a pleasant dream that seemed to last no longer than a morning's drowse, soon evaporated by crashing thunderheads. He stood suddenly, clutching the lamb to his breast, staring hard into nothingness. All this, he looked about, was to be taken from him. It was only that morning fate had ridden a black steed to his doorstep, a message under seal thrust upon him, rider clattering away hard down the road. He read, "War is upon us. An enemy in large force advances, a great unstoppable wave. Slaughter your livestock, put your house and crops to flame. Deny the invaders comfort and supplies. Rally to me as you're able, or we die. There is no shield against sorrow, and duty brooks no insubordination. Twice before, his worlds had burned. A rebirth of years bookended by blood. And now this, a light touch of death for the slaughter." Robert reached for the sharpened blade at his belt. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Naomi, let's start with you, please.
Oh, yeah, I really like this. You know, this reminds me of, you know, the wars. Well, with Napoleon, too, when he invaded Russia, you know, and with the Second World War, when Hitler invaded Russia, what they did is that they burned all their crops and killed all their livestock, and they just, you know, they starved the army, the advancing armies, till they were dying and frozen and had nothing. And, you know, that's one way that they won the war on their side. So that made me think of this, but this is amazing, Laurent, you know, and the way, the emotion that comes through in the writing, to your wonderful imagery, you know, the way you describe the Robert de Bayeux, you know, like when he has the lamb in his lap there and he's just caressing it. You know, it's a very heartfelt ride, and it really touches me. It touched me to the core. So, yeah, very well done. The beautiful writing.
Thank you, Naomi.
Thank you, Naomi. Scott, how about you?
I really like this, Lord. You know, this is one of those poems that I think has just amazing staying power that somebody hundreds of years from now can read it and just be awed by it. I love the way that it starts off with this poem of born in what seems to be the warrior's arms. And, you know, because I know we're limited on time, I'm going to kind of push ahead and, you know, and how it gets to the idea of war upon us and that the warrior's got duty and has to take care of that. And I want to ask a question because I haven't, you know, I don't really feel like I've had time to completely absorb the poem, so I'm going to ask you a question. Is with the pulling of his knife at the end, he's not doing something to his child, is he?
No.
I mean, he's about to slaughter the lamb.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is the you know, it's kind of like the burning of the homes and leaving nothing behind.
Right.
Yeah,
well, you have the lamb. The lamb it represents one of his children. He's unmarried. So that's one of his children he's about to kill, if you think about it. But I didn't want to say it. I just wanted the reader to kind of imagine it.
Oh, it's powerful, Lauren. I mean, but I wanted to ask because, you know, I kind of wanted to hear it from you. Yeah, it's powerful. That's what I got out of it as I sat listening to it and stuff. Yeah, it's a great ride. It's powerful.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Bill, how about you?
Well, I'm always impressed by Lamont. What he's done here is given us a bit of a history lesson because he's talking about the first Earl of Cornwall, the Norman half-brother to William the Conqueror. So I suspect some of this is actually an allusion to some of that military history, royal history. Very clever, Lamont.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, everybody. Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, and I'm going to toss one back to you, Rex. I'm going to put up a piece by D.L. Howard called Clutch.
Okay, okay.
So whenever you're ready.
Clutch by C.L. Howard. Your lips never parted, never raised, never fell, and the reach of your hand an emotionless sound that moved with the grace of old banshee's wail. But your eyes, they said it all. Your face, part beauty, might as well have been stone, a stark room of statue carved from ivory or bone, with deep graven tresses where yellow were churned. But your eyes, they said it all. The guilt of your passion, as strong as the brine, that ran down my cheeks with the force of the Rhine. As you look past your lover, your gaze meeting mine. Oh God, your eyes, they said it all. And Paul. And since you gave it to me, I'm giving it back to you for comment.
Great. I think this is a great piece. I love the rhyme in it. And I think that I like the two lines in between the stanzas, the three lines. And that's your mindset. You know, your lips never parted, never raised, never fell, and the reach of your hand an emotionless sail that moved with the grace of an old banshee's wail. But your eyes, they said it all. I really like it. I do. You know, your face for its beauty might as well have been stone, a stark Roman statue carved from ivory or bone, with deep raven tresses where yellow once shone. But your eyes, they said it all. I really think that this was really well done. I like the impact that those two little lines have. And great job. And thank you so much for putting them on the board tonight, CL. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gene. Laurent, how about you? What do you think about this?
Well, if I'm not misreading this piece, it's almost as if it's almost as if he's watching a woman who he loves or wants engaged someone else, yet he, while remaining engaged with this other person, is looking at him. But your eyes, they said it all, is repeated three times, each time in back of a brief description of her, what is she doing? And at the end, as you look past your lover, your gaze meeting mine, well, if she's looking past the lover, she's looking at him. And now he hits us with that refrain again, oh God, your eyes, they said it all, as if to say, I love you, you love me, yet we can't have each other because this exists. You can't say anything about it, but she can with her eyes. At least that's the way I take it. And if that's the way it's done, it's, wow, really clever and inventive.
Well, C.L. Howard said you got it, Laurent.
I think you're spot on with that. I had the same thought, Laurent, so nicely said. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I think Laura said it all indeed. I really liked, you know, how the impact of this, it's very powerful, and you know, and plus it flows so beautifully, and you know, those two lines, like Phil said, they're you know, they add all the emphasis right there into the poem there, just with those two lines of repetition. But I like that last stanza, you know, the guilt of your passion as strong as the brine that ran down with my cheeks with the force of the Rhine. As you look past your lover, your gaze meeting mine, oh God, your eyes, they said it all. So right there, you feel that longing, that guilt of wanting maybe somebody else. You know, the eyes say it all, like they say, eyes are a reflection of the soul. So, you know, yeah. Wonderfully, wonderfully done here by C.L. Howard. I really like this piece a lot.
Nice. Thank you very much, everybody. All right, Jean, we've still got a few minutes.
Okay, I got one.
What
do
you
want
to do?
I have the next piece I'm going to put up is by S. Sharp, and it's called Out the Window. So whenever you're ready, Scott.
Okay, give me just a second. Get that. Yeah. Oops. I'm lost in the fold. Here we go. All right. Give me just a second. I'm just about there. All right. This one's called Out the Window. It's actually going to be a female speaker to this poem, just so you know. Out the window, I twist under the pressure of the mammogram. Taking his word, that is what he's doing with his hand. Marble pillars hoist birds to the sky. Outside the third floor window, ships carry sugar and spices to the port of Algeciras. Pigeons embroidered on daylight message home like merchant marines. Months at sea with more than tumors hanging from their hearts. Sandy beaches melt away, glassy-eyed spectacles and time, erosion, violin sounds from portside bars, couples stumbling and laughing, waves crashing in applause, deep dive into a darkened sea, seagulls searching between lifeguard stations, ship horns sound, hollow as my stomach, full as my breast, laying open in a surgical gown. End poem.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. And Bill, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, this, for me, it reminds me of someone, like a stream of conscious that you use to escape from, maybe like when you're in a doctor exam, medical procedure, and you just let your mind drift away to anything other than what's happening, the probing, the prodding, whatever it is. And that's what I feel, like someone looking out a window to the birds, to the ships, anything other than have to focus on what's happening right now with a mammogram procedure or something like that. That's what I get. Someone escaping from the intensity of some medical procedure at that moment.
All right, thank
what
you,
an
Bill.
Interesting theme. A very creative theme to explore, by the way.
Thank you, Bill. Gene, how about you?
I thought this was a great piece. I'm not familiar with the other poet, so forgive me. There's a lot of things I'm not familiar with. But the take on this, I have to assume that she's a pretty straightforward poet. You know, I twist under the pressure of the mammogram, taking his word that is what he is doing with his hand. Marble pillars hoist birds to the sky outside the third floor window. It's like just the thoughts that run through your mind when you really don't want to be engaged with what's going on. I think sometimes, you know, you kind of a denial of sorts of what the way I would perceive it. And I think that you did a fine job with that, you know, looking at everything else around. And then when you go into the sandy beaches melt away, you know, there's a whole different issue going on, and it's time to go somewhere else again, in myself or in the stuff. And I think you did a great job with this, Scott. You know, I hope I'm even kind of close. That's what I see. Nice.
Appreciate it, Gene.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think Bill and Gene hit on both what I'm thinking, too. This is, you get to a point like that, you go with like an out-of-body experience. Because you hit on the opening up top, that last line, months at sea with more than tumors hanging from their hearts. So there's that that's sticking in the back of the mind because you open up the mammogram and finish with that. There's a dread. So the idea of getting outside the dread for the moment before the news actually comes is to go into something else, a ship on the sea, a ship in port, beaches, anything to keep your mind occupied from the dread that's already sitting in the back of your mind. And and then on the back end of this, that note, it's still ringing true. Hollow as my stomach, full as my breast, laying open in a surgical gown. So I'm guessing as full as my breast, there's the intonation there. She doesn't have to undergo surgery, which means she the mammogram came out clean, even though it is an awkward situation that you're put into, and it's necessary, yet the dread still hangs heavy until that moment you find out you're okay and you're good to go.
Or are the breasts filled with something?
All right, Gene, we're back on you.
I don't have time for another poem. I want to thank everybody. Rex, I want to thank you for co-hosting with me. Scott, I appreciate you calling in, hanging with us all night. Laurent, Bill, it was great having you join us tonight. Appreciate you and your comments.
I always have fun. Thank you.
Great.
Wonderful poem tonight.
Awesome having you here tonight as well. C.L. Howard, Selena, D.A., who else has been in the room, Rex? Help me out. You know, my memory's failing.
Selena, Christina, C.L., Katrina, Unsung.
Yes, Unsung Poetress. Welcome back. Appreciate it. It was great to have everybody in the and hope to have you all join us again. We'll check it out next week. Hopefully we'll have another wonderful board. We usually do. It was great having everybody. And enjoy your weekend. And at 12:30, Once Upon a Time with Luke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, and Pam Ray. I don't know what the topic is tonight. Moonshine. Moonshine and bootlegging. There you go. So take care of yourselves, and have a great great week. Hope to see you all again soon. Good night.
Bye. Have a wonderful night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night,
gang. Good night, all.
Good night.
I got 16. Uh-huh.
Yep. Probably tomorrow. Okay, Rex? this thing, it doesn't have a lot of patience with me, you know. Well, maybe it does. I don't know. It's crazy. One night it threw me out real quick. Bam. But, yeah, so we had to, it was a good night. It was a lot of, I'm surprised Scott stayed all night. He usually doesn't. And C.L. Howard never comes and hangs in the room all night. So that was really nice. That was pretty decent.